What are some of the myths of gospel reductionism? I've written part two of an article titled Better Than Good, Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Joy Pullman of The Federalist writes about her journey from charismatic experientialism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
I was blessed to be raised in a churched home. My mother and father taught me that to whom much is given, much is expected.
This is why identity politics can never work. Every person at his core has one particular thing that they really identify.
He ran in 2008 as saying that he was open to all kinds of restrictions on abortion, and yet his administration never put forward any restriction on abortion of its own, and that's something that they should be held accountable for, too.
Archaeology shows that again and again. I do not know of a single discovery that shows the Bible is simply wrong.
Anglican priests in Wisconsin, surrounded by Lutherans, love issues, etc.
Now, for half of you, you probably know what I'm talking about, but you haven't necessarily experienced it personally. Because half of you are female, and that's not a problem. But for the males out there, especially if you are white and Christian, you have experienced this, whether you know it or not. Sometimes it comes in the form of a just blatantly irrational view of the world, that all the world's problems, whatever they may be, are due to white male privilege. And if you're Christian, it's even worse. Now, let's be fair. White males, even Christians, have caused a lot of problems. They've also done a lot of good things. Probably their fair share of problems and good things. But is the world's problem the white male Christian? And how did that idea begin? Where does it come from? And is it possibly related to something we've talked a lot about lately here on Issues, etc.? And that is this insipid Gnosticism that pervades American culture. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. on this Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. You can join us as we talk about Gnosticism and white male privilege with Pastor Peter Burfind, and a little bit later when we play Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Our call-in number for your questions, comments, and your votes when we play Soundbite of the Week, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and our Facebook fan page for your votes for Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week, live this Friday afternoon, facebook.com/issuesetc. You can also send us a tweet at issuesetc. Pastor Peter Burfind joins us. He is a regular guest and pastor of Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Toledo, Ohio, author of the book Gnostic America, A Reading of Contemporary American Culture and Religion, According to Christianity's Oldest Heresy. Pastor Burfind, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Good to be back on, Todd. Thanks.
Why is it, as I look out my window into American culture, why is it that I sometimes feel like being white, which I am, male, which I am, and Christian, is somehow a sin?
Yeah, it's an involved answer. It involves getting into some of the subjects that I deal with when I deal with Gnosticism. It has to do a lot of times with the Gnostic cast of mind, and we can get into that. But I think the immediate thing is that we represent America's original sin, which is slavery. And, you know, without dealing with the nuances of that it was mainly, you know, Southern landholders, that all sorts of other people were involved in the slave trade, that, you know, we German Lutherans who came over in the mid-1800s had nothing to do with that. And in fact, when we came over, we joined the abolitionist side of things. But it just, we represent, in their minds, we represent not people, but we represent the system of oppression. And that's really what it boils down to, is people are no longer looking at each other in true flesh and blood, three-dimensional, real, individual, distinct people, but we're looking at each other as representatives or archetypes of a system. And that's really what it boils down to. So, you know, people will look at you and not see a human being. They won't see Todd. They'll see a representative of a system. And I think that's what it really boils down to.
I mean, sometimes they call that identity politics, that I'm viewed as a class of person rather than an individual.
Right. And that, I mean, that's where I bring in this whole Gnostic understanding, the whole Gnostification of our country and our culture right now. It's an attack on Christianity that's been going on since, you know, the beginning of the world, I would argue. I mean, St. John talked about Gnosticism as being sort of the doppelganger of the church from the get-go. And the fundamental idea of Gnosticism is that the flesh and blood creation of the Lord is a cosmic mistake. Well, if you look at this whole issue of race, what it's doing is it's looking at one aspect of our fleshiness, that is the color of the flesh, and it's saying, well, yeah, that's part of the systemic corruption and evil of the world. So the Gnostic is always looking at everything in this, what I call the black-white casting of their mind. Everything as it exists in its physicality or materiality is essentially corrupt and evil. And everything that the Gnostic proposes of salvation, which is very anti-flesh and very beyond the flesh, is purity and light. And that is what the Gnostics see as the source of all evils in the world is our fleshly designations, whether that means being male or whether that means white. Everything is reduced to archetypes. There is, like I say, there's no individual. You are not a human being, but you are a white man who has imported into those ideas all these privileged situations that you did not justly inherit.
So review for us again kind of the basic, and this is kind of a general cosmology, if you will, or metaphysics of what we're calling here Gnosticism.
Yeah, the basic cosmology is that each individual is a neutral self trapped in the flesh and blood body that we have and trapped in the material world that we're in. And not just the material world that we're in, but all of the systems and, you know, the various systems that exist in the natural world. For example, the system of, or institution, that's the word I was looking for, the systems and institutions of the world, such as the institution of marriage, or the system of capitalism, or the idea of science, or all these things that we would look at and say these are just sort of things that naturally arise, politics, or the political order, the institution of marriage, the importance of community. All these things Gnostics look at as part of the systemic evil of this world, and they're trapped in it. So you're trapped in whatever, you're trapped under the system of capitalism, you're trapped in the family that you're born in, you're trapped in a marriage. And the person that has the power in that structure is privileged. So in capitalism, supposedly whites are privileged. In marriage, the patriarchy is privileged. In a family, the father is privileged and so on. In a church, the pastors and priests are privileged. Meanwhile, the person on the other side, the flip side of that, is the oppressed one. And he's the neutral self that's trapped in whatever system. And so Gnosticism says the salvation happens when you escape from your fleshly designations, when you escape and rebel against these systems and institutions and become your own self, whatever that means. So that may mean rebelling against marriage. It means rebelling against the capitalistic arrangement or order of things. So if that means that whites, by generally speaking, you know, make more money on average or whatever, they must hold all the power, and therefore we have to rebel against them. But Gnosticism is a salvation religion that means basically rebelling against the entire created order and being free from all that. It's also the basis, I'd argue, of liberation theology a little bit also.
So let's talk about the way this kind of expresses itself, and we see it all around us, but give us some examples, if you would, of where we see this Gnostic premise at work when it comes to the kind of the universal evil that is white male privilege.
Yeah, okay, so like, you know, capitalism is one of the oppressive systems that we're in, and like I said before, when people think capitalism, they think of as Max Weber said, is that that's basically a Protestant idea. That was an idea developed by white Western men. And so basically white Western men came up with this idea of capitalism to subjugate the working people of the world and basically make a lot of money off of that. And so slavery was just an extension of that. And so the Gnostic mind, because they see everything in terms of archetypes and they don't see actual human beings, they see the white male as just sort of a representative of that system. Meanwhile, on the other hand, a minority will represent not you don't see them as individuals, but any sort of minority will be, just by their very nature, will kind of be a more authentic human being or more in touch with what really is because they've been oppressed for so long. And so, for example, with who is the new justice, Sotomayor, you know, this whole idea of the wise Latina. I mean, where does that come from? It's just by virtue of being a minority, you have this inherent wisdom. Spike Lee likes to talk about this concept of the numinous Negro. And it's this idea in movies where there's a supporting role and they always, it's always a supporting role, and it's always this wise minority figure, a man or a woman. It might be a judge or a coach or something, and it's never in the lead role, but they're always the consciousness of the movie. And Spike Lee makes fun of that because you're never dealing with black people as individuals. You're always dealing with them as some representatives of some innate wisdom or something. But yeah, you see it all over, the evidence of it. I mean, I think good evidence of it is just how you look at a commercial, you look at a sitcom, and generally the white males always are made to look stupid. And you know, where does that come from? It's interesting. But I think it's sort of marketing to this idea that white males are just by nature, they represent the old system of oppression. And therefore, you know, if you're on the right side of history, you're gonna not be that.
How does it relate to the other kind of vein of thinking or worldview, postmodernism and its tendency to deconstruct everything?
Yeah, that gets to kind of a little bit of the New Age idea that in the 60s, the idea is we're moving into a new age. The old age was all about linear, rational thinking. The old age was propositional philosophy, logic, rationality, science. You know, it was heavily influenced, yes, by white male thinkers. And therefore, the idea is, well, therefore, that this is how white males are. They're linear, logical, propositional. They come up with these categories. They think things to death. They're very logical, you know, all this kind of thing. But we're moving to a new age of femininity and new feminine understandings of thinking. And this is a little more metaphorical and poetical, and it's less grammatical. We're not bound by the rules of grammar anymore. It's more emotional. It's less clear, rational, illogical. And so we've kind of moved into this new age. And so part of that means deconstructing everything that has come up before. So if anybody thinks like someone from the old age, well, we have to deconstruct that. That's just how you think as a white male. Hitler was the first to do this. Hitler, but his target, of course, wasn't the white males, except insofar as it was Christians. But his target was the Jews. And he even talks about, he says, we got to move away from the Jewish conspiracy in the West to really emphasize analytical skills, critical thinking skills, and science. And we're moving into a new age where it's more magical thinking and mythologies rooted in the divinity of race or racializing of people. And it's very much rooted in the soil. So deconstructing is definitely part of that equation. Deconstructing the past. And so anything that's come up by a white male has to be deconstructed and understood as, well, that's just you putting something together to support your privilege. And this also gets back to Marxism also. I don't know if you've heard the expression, which I find a highly Gnostic expression, but are you woke? You know, you see this in the Black Lives Matter movement. Are you woke? And if you're woke, you're awakened to all these truths of you know, the white male dominance of Western thought and its abuses and how it's wrong. And you haven't woken up to the heightened consciousness of the new age, where we're all going to be this socialistic one group and there's going to be no privilege at all.
So I was wondering what that meant, because I've seen that floating around in the last month or so. It's essentially a new claim to understand the world as it is, rather than, well, white male Christians like us walking around in our darkened thinking.
Right. Yeah. It's another evidence of our Gnosticism. I mean, in fact, the phrase being awakened is one of the Gnostic metaphors for salvation. And it also gets back to Hegel and Marx and sort of that whole strain of Marxist thinking, that basically the capitalistic stage of world history is why people are in that stage, because they haven't an awakened consciousness to where history should go. And as one by one, people awaken to where history is supposed to be going. As one, in other words, as people become woke, then they will become part of the critical mass that will move history in the right direction, which invariably leads towards communism or socialism or whatever. And a lot of the Black Lives Matter and the black ideology, the identity ideology, is very much rooted in Marxism. And so, yeah, that becomes part of it. It's the same thing with feminists. You know, if there's a woman that's a conservative Christian who wants to take care of her family or stay at home, you know, she hasn't woke. She doesn't understand the oppression that she's in. And if in the Black Lives Matter, there is no thinking, there's no critical argument or understanding of things. You're either woke or you're not. And if you're a white male, you can't be woke. Therefore, you know, unless you do some sort of penance or something and subject yourself by totally, you know, confessing your sin, you are not woke enough.
So what would that look like for a white male Christian to qualify
as
for
woke?
What would he have to do?
Oh, he'd have to admit that he's been on the side of oppression. He would have to not say anything. You know, he basically cannot contribute anything to the discussion. He can only be a listening ear saying, you know, I hear where you're coming from. What can I do to make your life better? You know, I mean, sometimes you wonder, is the only thing that's going to satisfy it is just to agree to total reparations. I'm a national missionary on behalf of the Missouri Synod, and I work in a by and large black community. And I've run into some interesting characters, and one of them I ran into was a guy who believed in, I think, something he called Hebraism or something. But basically, he believes that when Christ returns, all the non-black people are going to be slaves to the black people to redress the grievance of black slavery in the 19th century. And I said, well, that doesn't seem, you know, you guys were enslaved for 300-400 years and we're going to be slaves forever. And he's like, yep. I thought that doesn't seem fair, but that there's this belief out there and there's no debating against it because it's not based in rationality, because rationality is one of the tools of the patriarchal white Western world. So you can't even discuss. Just to discuss and say, well, let's talk about that, let's debate that, is to say, no, you're using your tools of white privilege to browbeat me into agreeing with you.
So to seek facts, to ask for reasons, to request arguments be made is simply to, if I'm doing that in this conversation, mm-hmm. I am oppressing someone.
Yeah. Yeah, because logic is a tool of the white male to oppress and to support his privilege. And you know, the feminists did the same thing. I mean, you know, don't use rationality. Don't use your white tools. I mean, we just think differently. And just think about what that does with the ability to communicate God's word. I mean, it totally undermines the ability of us to communicate with people about the gospel, which itself is rooted in a very, you know, I misunderstand what I'm saying, but the gospel is a very rationalistic thing. It's rooted in words that make sense, in a grammar, in a structure that we can communicate. You know, this whole idea of the logos and the logos-centric cosmos that Christianity supports is the idea that two people from any culture can come together and be in communion with this objective quanta of logos-centric information. And we can convey that. Well, the deconstructionistic movement and postmodernism completely undoes that and makes the gospel incommunicable to cross cultures. And I mean, it's a perfectly satanic ploy, because now basically Christianity is off limits for blacks or Asians, because that's a white man's religion.
Pastor Peter Burfeind is our guest. We're talking about Gnosticism and white male privilege. Well, if that's the case, what replaces reason in this Gnostic worldview? There's no such thing as a perfect vacuum. Something has to take its place. What is it? We'll answer that question after this.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Come listen to Drs. Alvin Schmidt and Roland Elke at the 3rd Annual Concordia Apologetics Conference, Cultures in Collision, Faith and a Fractured World, this March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can register online at www.cuw.edu/apologetics or call 262-243-4343. That's the Concordia Apologetics Conference, March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Holy Cross Lutheran Church, Moline, Illinois, invites you to join us in receiving the Lord's gifts in word and sacrament. Sunday services are at 8:15 and 10:45 a.m., with Bible class and Sunday school at 9:30 a.m. We are located in the Quad Cities at 4107 21st Avenue, Moline, Illinois. Welcome in the name of our Lord.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
2nd wave feminism originated with these white, educated, middle and upper class women. And then women from minority groups came and said, well, your way of life only works because we've been raising your kids and cleaning your houses and doing all these nasty jobs that you don't want to do because you think you should all be pilots and CEOs.
I know some prophets who literally have a prophetic batting average worse than a National League bullpen pitcher right now.
It's not a coincidence that you hear women who say, I don't understand, I'm so successful in life or at my job, but when it comes to love, I'm not successful.
It's one thing to have same-sex attraction and be repentant of it and cling to Christ for forgiveness and the strength to resist the desire. We need to distinguish from that and those who would affirm same-sex attraction as well as acting on it.
In about 10 minutes, we're going to be playing Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, a taste of the four soundbites we're going to play for you in their entirety here in about 10 minutes. We play them, you listen, and then it's your turn. It's a very simple game. All you got to do is give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or leave your vote at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. And the person with the best vote live this Friday, February the 17th, will get the LPR bundle package. That's an I Have Issues t-shirt, an Issues Etc. travel mug, pen, bumper sticker, and notepad. When we play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week a few minutes from now. In the meantime, we're talking about Gnosticism and white male privilege. Pastor Peter Burfeind is our guest, author of the book Gnostic America. Peter, before the break, you were talking about how rationality is essentially rejected, consciously rejected by this Gnostic / postmodern worldview. What replaces reason? There's no such thing as a perfect vacuum. What rushes in to reason's place?
Well, and this is the big irony because the people who answered this question, people who determine what would replace the rationality, are white male Westerners. So what you're talking about is the Romantic movement replacing the Enlightenment, in a sense. And, you know, the Enlightenment pushed the idea of rationality and reason and science and evidence and all this kind of thing. And that very much was rooted in the Christian Western past. The Romantic movement, which sort of answered that Enlightenment movement, was very much against all that. And if you look at someone like Schopenhauer believed music, for one thing, was a metaphor of something that sort of spoke to a higher truth than rationality does. Of course, all the Romantic poets, poetry was something that when I came across that reminded me of the Sufis, which was a Islamic Gnostic group. And they too, you know, anything rational, that's bad. But, you know, poetry and jokes and stories and romantic poems, that more speaks to the truths that we're seeking. And then Schopenhauer, a romantic thinker, believed that sex was another thing that lifted us beyond, that was a replacement for rationality. So I think that we have to throw that into the discussion too. That has kind of become the new highest form of philosophy or thinking is sexuality, music, emotion, drama, jokes and story, you know, just everything but rationality. Anything that kind of tears away at the consistency or logic of the universe.
How does this Gnostic worldview of everything's framed within the terms of white male privilege, how does it impact how history is viewed, how history is taught, especially in our public schools?
Yeah, I mean, and there too, it's history is just the unfolding of the bourgeois. I mean, again, it's a Marxist idea. History is just the unfolding of the bourgeois quest for power, and the people that happen to hold all the power in world history, by and large, is the Europeans. And so it's all just about their desire to oppress everybody around them. And yeah, that definitely. And so the only solution that is to apologize for our history, to forsake it, to feel bad about it, you know, and it just becomes real irrational in the way it's dealt with.
So let's turn to kind of a churchly perspective here. Mm-hmm. What effect does this Gnostic view have on the church, in particular on the ministry in the church today?
Yeah, I have several things that, I mean, like I say, I work not only in a inner city situation, and I have to say, by and large, and that's the cool thing to keep in mind with a lot of these lofty discussions we have, is that most people are on the, you know, just, they're dealing with each other as human beings. I mean, most of the people I work with, they're just looking for a job, you know, the work we do there, they love, and we get along, and it, you know, I'm not going to say race isn't an issue, but we're able to talk about it freely and joke about it, and it's very natural, and I like that. But then, you know, at another level, I have come across it a little bit. Last summer, in fact, we were I was trying to do a summer program at his community center, and before I did the summer program, I specifically said, you know, I'm only going to do a Christian-based summer program. It was for children, a Christian-based summer program for children, because that's what I am. I'm a missionary. I'm going to proclaim the gospel. I'm going to talk about Jesus Christ. And they were kind of like, oh, okay, that's fine. Well, as we started getting into the planning stages, a new supervisor got involved, and she said, could you just focus more on character issues? You know, don't just talk about, you know, let's get away from faith and just talk about character issues. And I said, that wasn't the agreement. We're going to be talking about Christ. And I wasn't actually at this meeting. We had a summer worker who dealt with this, and he was great. But she started going after him and saying, but what you're doing here, you're coming in here as a white man, and you're going to give a false message to the people in the community, because they're going to see it just as white males coming in and bringing their white male religion and imposing that on us. And they had something else. I didn't quite investigate what it is, but they had something called the truth. And I think it's related to this whole being woke thing, but that's what they wanted to push, this idea of the truth. And we just didn't have any of it. But that most of the other people, like I say, were saying no. I mean, if they want to talk Christ, that's the agreement we had. But you do get that every once in a while, that, you know, get out of here with your white man's religion. The saddest example I had confronting this was, as I'm also a student or a campus pastor at the University of Toledo, my first year there, when we started ministry there, our first convert, so to speak, or our first baptism, was a Nigerian girl. She was a freshman, and she saw that we had services. I wrote it out on chalk on the sidewalk, and she came, and she wasn't baptized. So I said, would you like to get baptized, be in catechism? And she said, absolutely. So she went through the whole baptismal catechism and everything, and she went with us on service projects, and probably our most faithful member of our church, coming every week. Well, in the last couple of years of her being there, she started taking women's study classes and some of this identity, ideology stuff, this Marxism. And sure enough, she started talking about, you know, just basically talking about me as a poor pastor, saying, you know, you got all this white male privilege. It's all privilege that you have. And I'm just like, where is that coming from? You know, I've been working with you and you know, supporting you. And I was actually at the time I was teaching her how to drive. And she herself came from a wealthy Nigerian family with a doctor as a father and a mother that was successful in business or whatever. And, you know, obviously able to afford to come over America where they don't have scholarships. And yet I was the privileged one, and she was, you know, the one that was oppressed. And it's just stuff that had been fed into her from the campus, from the classes that she was taking. I mean, it's just, you hope that the foundation, I mean, we do believe this, the foundation of the Holy Spirit can negate that stuff, but it's a powerful, toxic doctrine that's being taught among our youth.
And let's just make it absolutely clear here with respect to what you just conveyed about its effect on just a regular pastoral ministry.
Yeah.
This view is not only contradictory, but it is toxic to Christian faith.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's totally a demonic thing. It's totally a demonic thing because it's based in irrationality, and the demonic is the realm of irrationality. And just, it totally undermines the ability of any white male, which happens to be the majority of pastors in America, it totally undermines the ability of white males to be able to communicate anything. I mean, it's kind of a brilliant strategy on the devil's part, but it's highly effective.
So what is the danger of viewing history, viewing our current circumstances, viewing everything around us within the framework of an absolutely evil majority versus a perfectly sinless and innocent minority, as opposed to a Christian worldview of man?
Yeah, that's a good thought provoker. I mean, on one hand, I mean, you're seeing what's happened with kind of what they call the alt-right of a lot of whites are starting to react and say, quit calling me evil, you know, quit saying that I'm a racist. And they're just not having any of it anymore. And, you know, because a lot of them don't come from a good Christian foundation, they're going to say, forget you. And they're just going to kind of take almost a white supremacist attitude and say, you know, hey, we're the majority. If you don't like it, tough, get out of here. On the other hand, the minorities, I think they're just being fostered in their victimology. You know, nothing, they're not being encouraged to take self-responsibility, because anytime their circumstances are not within their control and their ability to say, hey, I can do better for myself, but their circumstances are all because of the system and all because of the establishment. There's nothing they can do because it's this oppressive order that they have no power over. And I think that's where the toxicity comes from for minorities. You know, I mean, it's just, instead of saying, hey, you can, you know, you can do something for yourself, you can improve yourself, they're not seeing it that way.
Do you see a way out of this? Because, I mean, it seems to have crept up on us rather quickly and really become not just a view in society, but perhaps even the prevailing view in American culture and society.
Well, I think when guns start blazing, people start getting a little more contemplative about things, and hopefully, you know, I mean, you hate to say that, like, where are things leading towards? But, man, I mean, you just see some of the attitudes out there, and you wonder. I mean, I'm thinking about, like, that situation in Chicago where a group of black teens kidnapped a white male and basically tortured him for, you know, 6 hours or whatever. But again, I think those are isolated cases. I think by and large, people don't want things to get to that point. As far as a way out goes, I like to use the analogy of Wile E. Coyote when he runs off the cliff and he's suspended in midair for like 3-4 seconds, and then he looks down and, oh my goodness, I'm suspended in midair, and then he falls down. It's like nature eventually takes over. The laws of nature take over. And I see that happening. It's happened with abortion. You know, I mean, people are looking at ultrasound, seeing what's going on. I think it's going to happen with gay marriage. People are going to see that when you commodify children, that's not a healthy thing for society. And just a lot of the liberal leftist movements, it just takes some time for people to see how silly they are. And then when things kind of get back to normal. So I'm thinking that that'll happen with this also. I think a lot of this ideology is really more among, you know, maybe minority students at the academic level. And sadly, that doesn't filter down. But I don't know, like I say, beyond a few incidents here and there, and I work in a black community, I don't see a lot of the effects of it. So hopefully, you know, this will blow over and we'll get back to normal soon.
Pastor Peter Burfeind is pastor of Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Toledo, Ohio. He's author of the book Gnostic America, A Reading of Contemporary American Culture and Religion, According to Christianity's Oldest Heresy. You'll find a link to it at issuesztc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Peter, thank you again.
Thanks so much, Ted.
When we come back, it's time to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week live this Friday afternoon, February the 17th. Stay tuned.
The way she talks when she's spoken to down to me, the change has come. She's under my thumb.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as Confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the clcc.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a Confessional Lutheran. The clcc.org.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation with the new Martin Luther plush figure. It features the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. reformationgear.com. The new Martin Luther plush figure, reformationgear.com, and enter the coupon code ISSUESETC.